Hello, everyone, and welcome to McGill Care's webcast series supporting family and informal caregivers. I'm Claire Webster, a former caregiver, certified dementia care consultant, and founder of McGill University's Dementia Education Program. I work with a dynamic team of leading healthcare professionals to oversee the program, who include Dr. José Moret from the Division of Geriatric Medicine and Dr. Serge Gauthier, Professor Emeritus, formerly of the McGill University Research Center for Studies in Aging. McGill Cares is supported by the Amelia Saputo Community Outreach for Dementia Care. The McGill Dementia Education Program offers a very comprehensive range of free resources to educate and support persons living with dementia, family and informal caregivers, healthcare professionals, medical students, and the public at large. One of our most important resources is the Dementia Companion Guide that is currently available in close to 10 different languages. You can either download it for free from our website, or you can also purchase a printed copy from Amazon, which goes to support our program. But I highly encourage everyone to have a look at it. And again, it's available in close to 10 different languages. So today we have a very interesting topic. It's called Participating in Dementia Research, really trying to understand the process and the importance of participating in research. My guest today is my colleague, Dr. Pedro Rosanetto. Dr. Rosanetto is the director of the McGill University Research Center for Studies in Aging. He is a professor of neurology at McGill University and a clinical neurologist with expertise in the quantification of dementia pathophysiology and preclinical diagnosis of Alzheimer's disease using biomarkers. He is also affiliated with the Douglas Research Institute, the Montreal West Island Integrated University Health and Social Services Center, and the departments of neurology, neurosurgery, psychiatry, pharmacology, and therapeutics at McGill. What a bio you have, Pedro. Dr. Rosanetto will talk about the type of research that is undertaken at the McGill University Research Center for Studies in Aging, the role of research volunteers, and how to become a research participant. Welcome to McGill Cares.
Thank you very much for this invitation and for the opportunity to be here discussing all these things with you about the clinical trials and try to convey a positive message and try to tell and explain people the importance of participation in clinical trial these days. So the first and the most important thing to tell you is that clinical trial is something that is becoming very different these days. And we are very happy to offer at the McGill Center for Studies in Aging an opportunity to for people that are cognitively normal or have some cognitive problems to participate in the progress that we are making in Alzheimer's disease.
So I think maybe before we get into the how, maybe you can explain to us what is the current state of dementia research in general? Like, where are we? Are we learning anything new and what's promising? I know that we worked together on the World Alzheimer's Reports, and you had a very significant contribution as one of the authors and talking about biomarkers and what's coming up. So perhaps you can provide us with an overview of where are we currently with research.
Right. I think the first and the most important thing to tell is that we have to make a distinction between dementia, Alzheimer's disease, right? So dementia is the final stage of a great number of neurological diseases, right, that will affect cognition and will affect the functionality and independence and the autonomy of patients. So Alzheimer's disease is the most frequent cause of dementia. And Alzheimer's disease has been recently redefined as merely a type of dementia to a process. And the process characterized by the deposition of two proteins in the brain. One is called protein amyloid and another is called protein tau. And Alzheimer's disease today is conceptualized having three clinical states. One is a silent phase of the disease, where the proteins exist. They are harming the brain, but they don't cause any type of symptoms. The second phase of the disease, where there is mild symptoms, but the mild symptoms, they do not affect the autonomy and independence of a person. And the third phase of the disease is the dementia, where there is problems related to memory and thinking, and also the person becomes dependent. So for the clinical trials in Alzheimer's disease today, they target the three types of patients. Patients without symptoms, but with the proteins, we call it secondary prevention. The trials, the second type of trials are for patients with mild cognitive impairment and mild dementia. And this is extremely important because these individuals, they are in the beginning of the process of becoming more and more affected by these proteins that accumulate in the brain. So we call these proteins that accumulate in the brain and harm the brain as a pathophysiological processes. So it's very important also to understand that the participation of clinical trials sometimes involve patients that they have absolutely no symptoms, right? And patients that are at a very early stage. So we can divide these studies in two types of studies. One, observational studies, where you can see how the disease progresses over time. So there is not necessarily an intervention. And there are clinical trials that they come with an intervention. The intervention can be pharmacological, which is a kind of experimental drug, and non-pharmacological that perhaps involves some level of exercise or cognitive activation or changes in the nutrition. But the point is that the participation of clinical trials is an activity that people have to feel comfortable and participate. It doesn't, and there are clinical trials involve all sorts of clinical presentations. But the most important thing is to consult your physician and ask your physician what does he think about this specific clinical trial that's going on. Today, we know from the news that there is a new type of intervention that has been recently approved in the United States. And this intervention involves monoclonal antibodies. So these monoclonal antibodies, they are kind of proteins that are able to capture and dissolve these agglomerates of amyloid and tau that causes Alzheimer's disease in the brain. Specifically, very recently, there is a drug called lecanemab, and this is an anti-amyloid drug. And this anti-amyloid drug is capable to remove the amyloid that is accumulated over time in the brain of these patients. And it's believed that the removal of these proteins is the mechanism by which people somehow recover or they stabilize the disease process over time. So
for those people, so just to ask a question, so for those people watching today, everybody's going to be writing down the name of that drug. Is it available on the market yet? How, and if not, how long before it could get to market? How would people have access to such a drug?
Right. So accessibility, because this is a very new drug, so accessibility remains an issue. Currently, the drug is only approved in the United States, and the commercialization is on its beginning. So this is a medication that it's kind of has a complex administration because it involves endovenous injection of the drug, and involves quite frequently once every 2 weeks. So this is a medication that brings the promise of stabilization of the disease progression, but also, you know, involves a significant amount of efforts in terms of administration. This is the second at its on its class. So the first one was aducanumab, and then aducanumab was probably there was some sort of problems associated with this with this approval, because it was not very clear what would be the clinical benefit of this medication. But for the lecanemab, the second one in class, there is a very clear idea what we can expect after the administration of this drug. But coming back to the clinical trials, there are other monoclonal antibodies in testing, and these monoclonal antibodies are somehow they intend to do the same thing, to remove these proteins that we believe that cause Alzheimer's disease. And it looks like they're becoming better and better.
So a question that a lot of people have is oftentimes, at what point do these drugs work? I mean, does a person take this drug the moment they receive a diagnosis and then it would reverse the effects of Alzheimer's disease? Or like when would somebody start taking this drug? Or is it to prevent it? Or once they're in, for example, the middle stage of dementia, can it reverse the dementia? So that's where I find that it's not very clear for the general public.
And this is a very important question, because at this point, what we know is that there is a phase three study, which is a study, phase three study is a study that looks to the efficacy of the medication, that looks to a very restricted time frame of 18 months. And we know that during 18 months, the individuals who were exposed to the drug, they as compared to the ones that are not exposed to the drug, they show 30% stabilization of the cognitive decline. It doesn't mean at this point that the drug is recovering memory or recovering any function, but shows that the drug is capable to stabilize. And this is a very important point, because we don't know what happened if after 2 or 3 years of exposure of the drug. And one thing we know is that perhaps it will take much more time for the brain to reorganized after the mitigation of these pathological processes that destroys the brain. So we don't know much about and what to expect from these interventions. And that's the reason that we need the clinical trials, because the clinical trials are special settings in where we can observe in a very controlled way how this medication work and how this medication and how this medication translates into an amelioration, not only on cognition, but also in many, many other aspects associated with the disease. For example, we use a medication for amyloid, but we also have an improvement of the protein tau, an improvement of neuroinflammation, and an improvement of many other aspects associated with Alzheimer's disease.
So the purpose of my webcast was especially to really help people understand what's involved in participating in clinical trials. So perhaps you could, start from, the basic, because let's say it's like somebody like myself, I don't know anything about participating in clinical trial. What would be involved? Like, what's the criteria? And then take me through the steps so that I understand what my commitment would be for something like this.
Absolutely. So a clinical trial is an act of a giving something for science and for the general population. So the clinical trial involves the participation in a series of tests that will allow us to assess whether a medication or an intervention is stopping the disease process, or perhaps is somehow improving the cognition. So there are several types of clinical trials. Some clinical trials only require for the patients to undergo to certain blood tests and some cognitive testing. Other clinical trials, they involve the some sorts of scans, some PET scans, which are involve the exposure to some degree of a radioactivity, because they are nuclear medicine tests. These tests allows us to see these bad proteins that cause alterations in the brain, but there is some exposure to some radioactivity. There are some tests, there are some clinical trials that involve as lumbar punctures in order to obtain the cerebrospinal fluid to understand whether this medication is really removing the pathological agents that cause Alzheimer's disease. So there are trials that ask for the volunteers very little, and the other trials that request a lot of effort from the part of the volunteers. And for the volunteers, the message, or the participants, the message is to choose the one that you feel comfortable. Choose the one that you feel that you're giving a reasonable contribution, and also the ones that you have some sort of involvement with the team that are conducting the studies. Sometimes, we can see at some advertisements to visit some specific places. Most of the times, it works very well, but it's very important to feel safe and to feel comfortable when you're conducting these studies. Another important aspect is that there is some commitments because these studies are longitudinal. So we want to understand the person before taking the medication, and you want to understand the effects of the medication in various aspects of cognition and various aspects of the general health associated with these medications. In general, we say that there are three types of studies, clinical trials. There is the phase one, where you are testing actually the side effects, and you are testing actually the doses that we will be using in the future. So these are studies that are very small. Patients, they don't necessarily need to be to have a disease. It can be conducted even in completely normal individuals. There are studies on phase two where you're looking for safety and about the side effects associated with a specific drugs, of specific dosage of the drugs that we are using. And there is phase three studies where you are comparing the effect of a specific drug with the standard of care, whether the new medication will be performing better than the medication that you already know. So these studies, sometimes they are restricted to time frames of 18 months, sometimes it's much larger than that. But it's very important when somebody takes the decision to participate on the clinical trial to do the best as they can to finish the clinical trial, because one of the important causes of issues related to the clinical trial or inconclusive clinical trial is when they participate quit the studies in the middle of the studies. But again, this is it's very important, a good judgment to understand when the bar is too high for every single individuals. So when you do clinical trial, is always give the completely freedom for the person to decide when enough is enough. Sometimes, most of the times, people are able to finish the studies without any kind of problems. But sometimes, for reason A or reason B, the study, the load of the study, and the activities involved in a specific clinical trial are a little bit too much. So people
So,
have to feel comfortable to quit whenever they wish to quit.
what risk factors are involved? Because when you're mentioning, clinical trials and trying out medication, so what risk, what potential risk factors could there be?
When you do a clinical trial, we are trying to find, for example, what are the most important adverse events or side effects, right? So we don't know because we never expose a population to these medications. So what we want to do is to understand, and sometimes this is unpredictable. Some medications, they are more, they affect a little bit more the intestines. So people, they have gastrointestinal side effects. Other individuals, they can present change on the circulation, and patients can present change in pressure, or the heart can beat a little bit faster or a little bit slower than the normal. So the idea is to expose patients to safe drugs of medication and see how they react. So there, and specifically in the case of Alzheimer's disease clinical trials, there is the potential to develop, for example, allergic reactions to certain types of monoclonal antibodies. Sometimes, you know, we present also some difficulties associated with the circadian cycles. Some people, they have difficulties to fall asleep. Other patients become a little bit, you know, prone to fall asleep. So the every single drug has a particular type of profile. And the idea of the clinical trial is to define when the medication is appropriated, what is the dose that you have to provide to the individuals, and whether the intervention is capable to provide a tangible clinical effect.
And are these tests or trials done in a hospital setting? Like, what is the setting like? And if it is in a hospital setting, do people remain in the hospital while trying it? Like, how are people supported?
Early phase of clinical trial, for example, phase one, is typically conducted in the hospital setting. Late phases of clinical trial, like stage three, they are conducted in specialized clinics. There is no need for procedure to be taken in a hospital environment. Is it true that for this new generation of medications that involves monoclonal antibody, usually the first injection is taken in the hospital setting to assure that the patient won't develop any kind of allergic reaction that requires immediate intervention. So, for example, for lecanemab, we are starting with this trial here at the McGill Center for the Studies in Aging. The first injection will be taken in the in the hospital setting, and the subsequent injections will be provided at home with the help of nurses with expertise in home injections.
So for criteria, again, I'd like to just come back to the criteria, because you said you were looking for people who are healthy. So, are these people who have no cognitive issues, however, have a history of Alzheimer's in their family? So that's my first question. And the second question is, for those people that have already been diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease, what stage is too advanced to participate in this trial?
So everything depends on the trial. So the trials that you have currently in the McGill Center for the Studies in Aging, they involve patients with a very early stages of the disease, patients with a family history of Alzheimer's disease, genetic case of Alzheimer's disease, and also patients with the diagnosis of Alzheimer's disease who have neuropsychiatric symptoms. We know that when the disease progresses, the patients start to develop a little bit of agitation, a little bit of difficulties to interact in social environments. And we call these difficulties neuropsychiatric symptoms, especially because the patients develop a lot of anxiety. So we are conducting some studies to mitigate actually these symptoms. And these are studies that usually target individuals with a little bit more advanced symptoms of Alzheimer's disease. For monoclonal antibodies, the idea is to target patients in the early stages of the disease, particularly patients with mild cognitive impairment and patients with mild stages of Alzheimer's disease. And monoclonal antibodies are not necessarily, the studies involving monoclonal antibodies, they don't necessarily enroll individuals with a more advanced stage of the disease, because it's not believed that the removal of amyloid in these patients will translate in a clear clinical benefit. So the idea is to, for monoclonal antibodies, there is to target patients at earlier stages of the disease. And that's why the name of this intervention is called disease-modifying interventions. So there are interventions that are designed to stop the building up of proteins that cause Alzheimer's disease in the brain of patients. So everything depends on the type of studies. There are studies that are target fairly early stages, and more advanced stages of the disease.
So how would this clinical trial benefit a person that is cognitively healthy? Like, I'm trying to understand that part. So let's say you're looking for healthy individuals. Why would a healthy individual participate in this type of trial?
Right. So there are individuals that they are cognitively healthy, but we know that they are building up these proteins in the brain. We call it preclinical stages of Alzheimer's disease. So in this and in these individuals, we know that that they have already the diagnosis of Alzheimer's disease, but the symptoms are not yet there. So the idea is by removing this proteins that are causing the disease, right? The protein amyloid and the protein tau. It's an efficacious way to prevent the disease progression and to prevent the cognitive decline associated with the presence of these proteins in the brain. So there is a benefit for that, but it's very risky in many, many ways. So in the sense that we don't know exactly how the disease will progress in every patient that has Alzheimer's disease pathophysiology. Possibly in these individuals, they will develop the disease at some point, but we don't know exactly when. And we don't know exactly whether the risk associated with these interventions will compensate the benefits associated with these medications. So there are some studies that they look to this type of a prevention in patients that have very high risk to develop of the disease. So in this specific case, they are carriers of a genetic polymorphism. So it's a small change on the genes that you make them much more susceptible to develop the disease over time. So when these individuals they come with and they are carriers of these genes and they have these proteins that cause Alzheimer's disease pathophysiology in the brain, then it becomes reasonable to expose these individuals to interventions to remove the protein and to try to mitigate the progression from a cognitive normal status to a mild cognitive impairment condition.
And this is something, this genetic testing is something that you do at the McGill University Research Center for Studies in Aging, correct? I mean, you have people that have a history of familial Alzheimer's in their family, and they want to find out if they are at risk. And this is something that you and your team do as well.
Yes, so genetic, we have studies here that are looking to genetic vulnerability to develop Alzheimer's disease. And there are individuals that, and we have a special group of patients that they have causative genes for Alzheimer's disease. This is very rare, it's about 1% of all the cases of Alzheimer's disease. But these individuals, we find them in the population. And we have a specific clinical trials targeting this type of disease. Patients that they have genetic mutations that cause Alzheimer's disease, we know precisely where is the problem and precisely why do they have the disease. And by the interventions that we are offering to these individuals, will allow us to mitigate the disease progression and hopefully keeping them cognitively stable for a long period of time. So these individuals are a little bit different from what we call the sporadic Alzheimer's disease, because usually they are younger and the disease happens in these individuals in a little bit more aggressive fashion. So there are other risk factors that are associated with the disease, and this is also, an enrollment factor in some clinical trials. So are especially individuals who are carry of apolipoprotein for a polymorphism, which is a kind of a genetic variant present in various populations in different proportions. And these individuals, they have a much higher risk of developing the disease. So when these individuals, they enroll in the clinical trial, they will have assessment of their genetic status, they'll have assessment of their disease pathophysiology, and they will be undergoing to what we call disease modifying interventions. So which are medications that intend to stop the building up of proteins in the brain in order to keep these individuals cognitively stable for long periods of time.
So just so that I'm clear, people that agree to participate in the clinical trial will undergo first a genetic test to see if they are predisposed to have Alzheimer's, is that correct?
Depends on the trial. Some trials, yes, they will undergo to a very detailed genetic characterization. Other trials, they will undergo to a very, how can I say, mild. But because the prevalence of the vulnerability polymorphisms in our population is so high, I think every single clinical trial will involve some degree of genetic testing.
So can you talk to us now about what clinical trials you have currently going on with your team, and which of these trials are you looking for participants, and how can people become involved?
Right. So we have several trials here. So the most important one, I think, is our observational trial. So it's a trial in which we just patients come, they do a series of tests involving blood sampling. Some of them involve the CSF donation, some of them involve imaging techniques, magnetic resonance imaging, and a scan for amyloid and a scan for tau. And you just observe these individuals over time. What this is called an observational trial. There is other trials that involve some pharmacological interventions. So we are one of the first centers in Canada to start with a trial that involve an anti-amyloid and anti-tau drug. So while the patients will be there is a specific population that we target, individuals that are carriers of a specific gene mutations. So all these individuals, they will receive an anti-amyloid therapy, and the trial look actually to the combination between an anti-amyloid and anti-tau therapy. So this is a very long trial. It's a trial that will last about 6 years, and the idea is that we will be able to stop the progression of the disease and consequently stabilizing the cognition of these patients. Nearly all the patients, they are destined to develop Alzheimer's disease. And I think this is one of the most important trials that we have at this point. We have also some trials that are looking to neuroinflammation. So the mitigation of neuroinflammatory processes in the brain, because these proteins that accumulate in the brain, they trigger some inflammatory responses. So these inflammatory responses can be deleterious. They can potentialize the effects of these toxic proteins that accumulate in the brain. And the idea is to stop by stop by stopping the inflammation, we will be somehow relieving the progression of the disease. So we'll have some trials looking specifically to these individuals, and this trial involves patients who have already with the diagnosis of Alzheimer's disease conducted clinically. So there are another trial that we are looking to neuropsychiatric symptoms, and the idea is to be able to control anxiety, hallucinations, and hesitations in patients with a mild stage of Alzheimer's disease. I think it's important, we are very happy to be able to provide options for patients in all sorts of stages of Alzheimer's disease with very little symptoms, with the beginning of the disease, and also with more advanced stages of the disease. Because Alzheimer's disease is a complex disease, involve a lot of stages, and these stages, they come with various types of neuropsychiatric symptoms. And what's important is to offer to these individuals the chance to try something new, try something that would somehow advance the knowledge and also bring to everybody else, to the next generation, some options to be able to live with the consequences of these brain diseases.
So, Dr. Pedro Rosanetto, thank you very much for taking the time to be with us today. We will put all of the information related to participating in these trials on our Trusted Resources website. And as well, we have a slide so that people will know how to get in touch with your team. to become participants. And thank you very much. I found this very, very educational, and hopefully it will have really demystified the whole how to participate in research for many people as well. So thank you for taking the time.
Thank you very much for the opportunity.
This webcast is an initiative of the McGill University Dementia Education Program, which is funded by private donations. If you would like to make a contribution to our program or for more information, please visit us at mcgill.ca/dementia. And if you would like to join our mailing list to be notified about upcoming episodes of McGill Cares, as well as other important programs and resources from us, please email us at dementia@mcgill.ca. Thank you for watching.